Welcome to Harmonious Workplaces, a podcast about corporate culture, organizational change management, and workplace behavior. Harmonious Workplaces was started by independent consultants Rich Cruz, Ben Kleinman, and Cheryl Volpe to explore, challenge, and build on various organizational culture and change management concepts. It's a blend of theory and practice based on their personal and professional experiences working with companies of all sizes across various industries. If you own a business, lead a team, want new ideas about the corporate environment, or just want to listen to a group of consultants talking about how to make work more enjoyable, we invite you to sit back, relax, and dive in with us to Harmonious Workplaces. And welcome back to Harmonious Workplaces. This is our sixth episode, and we want to welcome back Cheryl Volpe. Hey, Cheryl, how are you?
Good to be back. Thank you.
Great, great. And I'm Rich Cruz, and this morning we also have my partner in crime here, Ben Kleinman.
Hey, everyone. Ben. All right. Yeah, so this is cool. I'm glad we're back. This is great. And last time we were talking quite a lot about our tips to make any change implementation successful, and we still ran out of time. So we're going to continue that conversation. Today is part three of our practical tips that you can use to make any change initiative go smoother. And so first off, just to get everyone up to speed on all the exciting stuff, we talked about tips that would be helpful in those early stages when considering a change, framing out its contours, things like that. And so some of the key things we talked about had to do with clear communication, especially at that executive level, when you're clarifying the why, so that everyone at that top level is aligned. And it makes it much easier to have that cascade throughout the organization. Mm-hmm. We also talked about being intentional with your communications, being open and honest about what you know and what you don't know, so that everyone has an opportunity to be part of that co-creation that creates that psychological safety that you guys are such experts in. And then we touched on how stories can be a really effective way to make that change resonate at the emotional and intellectual level. So that was just the beginning. And so then time Rich and I, you and I were talking about how we kind of keep that change going, how we keep it successful, keep that momentum as the change evolves. And so some of the things that we really hit on last time had to do with continuing that use of stories because they resonate both emotionally and intellectually. Yep. We wanted to use stories to highlight positive behaviors and celebrate successes or significant learnings along the way. Those can be like positive wins that you might think of, or they can be failures that you learn from and grow out in a different way. And then stories can also be used in we thought a really nice construct for a story is that sort of hero challenge success framework type of thing, so that the folks that are going through the change can see themselves as those heroes that are taking on that challenge. Mm-hmm. One other thing we talked about was this continuation of this idea of being intentional. Intentionality is super important. So that came through in two ways last time: having a cadence, being really intentional about your cadence for check-ins, and that's sharing information, but also gathering information. Really important to do both of those. And then also being intentional, Rich, this was really good idea from you around metrics, what you're tracking, how you're tracking it, how frequently you're tracking it. And then the last thing we talked about was this use of multimodality for messaging and how you want to use lots of different media and mechanisms to share your information, since people like to consume information in so many different ways, in different formats, in different amounts of text and content and all that sort of stuff. And then we also wanted to touch on this idea of evolving your messaging. So I think we called it the change of the change. As the initiative evolves, the contours might shift a little bit, even though the direction is the same. And so those are some things. Today, we're going to keep that momentum going and get to that sort of closeout and hope that we can keep some tips forward as far as embedding those behaviors. Before we do all that, Rich, what did I miss from last time? Cheryl, what did I miss from our past two times?
I think you did a great job with the overview, man.
Super, my brilliant, opinion. Wicked, mega awesome.
Cheryl, anything on that?
Sure, I think that was a great summary, Ben. And what I was noticing as I was watching the last recording is that a lot of our information so far has been from that top down perspective, that leadership, mm-hmm. going back to the planning, the communication, the measuring, the cadence of the feedback processes and all those things. Mm-hmm. It occurred to me that when we talk about how the momentum of the change keeps moving forward, it has everything to do with the employees at that point. They're sort of set into the wild to use their training, mm-hmm. to use the mm-hmm. information that was given to them. And that's when the leadership can really tell how effective was I with all of those previous steps. Sure. And
I love that. Yeah.
It comes down to that motivation. Did leadership understand what motivates their employees? The training could have been excellent. The support mm-hmm. could have been fantastic. Everything could have been very expensive in setting the whole thing up. But if the employees aren't motivated mm-hmm. because they don't see the goals or they don't see what the reward will be, then you will not see the results that you're looking for when you are letting folks run with what they've been.
I like that. So maybe the theme of today's tips or guidance or best practices would be around motivation and incentivizing those desired behaviors so that they get embedded. I like that.
Yeah. It becomes more part of the culture, you know, mm-hmm. as they're motivated to do that.
How do you see the leading companies? What are some of the best practices that you've seen around generating the motivation that we want people to have, or creating the right incentives, or using the right mechanisms to incentivize people on the regular? What are some things that folks out there can do?
One of the most effective methods in my experience has been keeping that psychological safety in a condition where folks feel open and free to share their feedback as they set out on their journey to implement the change. And that includes mm-hmm. being fearless about saying, you know what, I need to be retrained. Or, you know what, it's harder than I thought on my own, or I need to take better notes, or, you know, that freedom to express what's really happening. Because if that isn't there, then the snowplow will just keep moving forward and people will be failing and being in their anxiety and fear over this failure will just increase. And then leadership won't even know if they don't set the pace for that feedback.
Yep. Can we dig in a little bit more there? I know that a lot of times we've talked about creating environments where there's psychological safety, and we've talked a little bit in prior episodes about how people can do that. How do you see people keeping that sustained? Or is it just something that once it's there from the beginning, people get used to this idea that they can walk into their manager's office at any time, or they can raise their hand at any time and say, I need a little help, or I see this is going sideways. Do we want to keep the experiment running, or do we want to shut it down and just capture some learnings and move on? How do people make sure that they continue to have that safety valve? I think we called it a beanbag on a prior episode, that sort of social beanbag that they can just flop back into.
Sure.
Especially because there's so much organizational churn, right? You always have new people coming onto your team or new leaders coming in, and they bring their own ideas and their own enthusiasm and their own perspectives. But how do you maintain that kernel of safety?
Sure. Well, it's a two-way street, right? Mm-hmm. So the individual has to feel motivated, back to motivation, to if they don't feel that safety, that they have to feel motivated to breach that gap. And that could be incentive in reward for financial. If I don't master this change, I won't get that reward that I'm performing to, and I can't perform to my optimum. So regardless of how I feel about walking into my boss's office and saying, look, I need help, mm-hmm. I am motivated by the idea that if I don't, I will fail and I will not get that reward and I will mm-hmm. not keep my performance up. So it does come back to that motivation. And then
incentivization. Okay.
Incentivization. Gotcha. Right. Okay. Which makes me think of Vroom and expectancy theory, right? Mm. And Vroom, this is going back to the 1964.
Vroom?
Vroom, V-R-O-O-M. Vroom.
Tell me, this sounds like another theory.
It is a great theory, and it is
causing our regularly scheduled tips and tricks programming to have a OD organizational design theory.
In a nutshell, it's very simple. There are three steps. Expectancy is your expectancy of what the outcome will be will inform your effort. And if you see your effort having a reward that you hope to achieve, then your performance will go up. The second, so there are three parts. There's expectancy, instrumentality, and valence. Expectancy part is if you will put in the effort and keep an excellent performance up if you think the reward will be worth it. Okay. The instrumentality is taking the performance that you are exerting and connecting that to the outcome that you're expecting. And the valence is the outcome that you're expecting is the reward that you are working towards. So,
okay. So it's getting your expectations and reality aligned.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And so if I expect to get a promotion, if I implement this change to the expectations that leadership has invested in it, mm-hmm. then I will perhaps go up the ladder. I will perhaps get a raise. I will perhaps be rewarded in some way that is important to me.
Right.
So keeping the momentum of a change that has been implemented is dependent on how motivated I feel to welcome that change and excel at it, which is tied to my sense of expectancy for reward.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like it.
It makes me think then as someone who might be championing a change or someone who might be wanting the organization to move in a certain direction, or even someone who's that person that's going to implement the change or just help that change move, it mm-hmm. seems like there's got to be some kind of agreement on what expectations are and whether those are appropriate. So as a leader, I might say, okay, it's your job to help me get this change done for the good of the company. And as an employee, I might say, well, that's nice, but it's going to require me to work X amount more hours or sacrifice my weekends for some amount of time or whatever it is, learn new behaviors, do something that's a little outside of my comfort zone. There better be some what's in it for me. And then that has to be some kind of conversation or some sort of agreement with between the people who want the change and the people who are different, who are doing the change. And then that sort of the success of that conversation or however that's played out will probably depend a lot on the level of psychological safety that the organization has and that freedom for people to discuss and sort of say, well, yeah, this is a really good thing. I love the company. I want the company to succeed, but you're asking me to sacrifice 6 months of my life for this thing. And, you know, all I'm going to get is a little t-shirt at the end of it. I don't know. Maybe that's right for some people. Maybe it's not. Right. And so that's then back to that.
Yeah. So looping it back to how do you promote an environment where psychological safety is ongoing throughout mm-hmm. the time span of a change taking hold.
And maybe even after.
And after.
Yeah.
The degree of that safety and how it is sustained is contingent on what is driving me to either overcome the fear that I feel or I don't. And I disengage. Mm-hmm. And then the change on my team or in the grand scheme of things will eventually fail. And mm-hmm. leadership could be scratching their heads after this expensive training and all this support, and even in a feedback loop, if the employees are afraid to give honest feedback, even that can fail. And right. then you go back to what Rich was talking about, measurements and data. Oh, this change has failed and we've done everything right, but the data is showing that it is not sticking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So incentives then, what are some good ways to incentivize people? Because there can be long-term incentives, like at the end of X, you'll get that promotion you were talking about, or you get a bump in salary, or, you know, you'll get more people on your team or something like that. There can be short-term incentives like, hey, you just did a really nice job with that memo. Kudos to you. Or I know that was a long weekend. I'm going to, you know, buy you a Starbucks card or, you know, something more meaningful than that. But it's not like the big promotion quite yet. So
right.
yeah.
What are some things that you guys are seeing that work well to incent people?
Rich, I don't know if you have something right away, but I didn't want to lose this train of thought.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
It gets trickier when you start looking at incentives, because even the expectancy theory, you know, expectancy, instrumentality, valence, those three simple elements, they're still cognitive processes. And the outcome is not necessarily the major deciding factor as an individual goes through all of those stages of decision making, right? So incentives are trickier. It is not predictable all the time. And it might not be just that financial. For some people, it's always financial, you know, but
yeah, some people don't care at all about that, or very little, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Right. Go ahead, Rich.
Oh, no, I've found that, and I think I think it's been ingrained in me since I've had my first business coach in, like, I don't know, what was it, 2006 or something like that. And I've had a bunch since then, let me tell you. You know, I've heard, you know, SMART goals, right? Specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time constrained, right? Goal setting theory, which was, so here's another theory, right? That came from Locke and Latham, who wrote this textbook that we, you know, we had, and they've had a bunch of papers too. But goal setting theory, right? I mean, it's when you can specify where you're, what that destination is, and that's on the, that could be on the group level, on the individual level, on the organizational level, right? So when you can have those goals set, and so you're setting up expectations, right? So it's somewhat based in Vroom's theory, right? Where you're setting expectations, but when you allow them to set some of their own, right? That's, I think that's something that that has been key to some of the changes that I've done. For instance, you know, in a Salesforce implementation in the past, you know, I've had specific goals and milestones we had to meet along the way, right? But I also had each of the people that I was coaching through this to set their own personal goal and professional goal. And when I say personal goal, it's like professional development goal, right? So they had basically, it was a learning goal, professional development, and then a career goal, right? And that could be a reward of, I want to get X amount of commission, or I want to get X, you know, I want to, you know, move up to the next level of something or whatever. During this period of time, be very specific and tying it to those organizational objectives, right? It takes time though to do that, you know, when you're working with the individual. So it's costly, but it's, you know, from a resource perspective, but in my opinion, it's so worth it, because when they can see where they're going and they can see stepwise how they're getting there, it becomes a motivating thing, and it makes it stick, you know, when, especially when everybody's moving towards that same purpose. So that's what I'd say about that.
I like sure. that. Co-creating.
And you reminded me too, Rich, a lot of that, a lot of the examples that Gary Latham had in his book, and it was pivotal for me too, everything that he taught us. There was a lot of idea of competition to motivate too, right? He had the teams mm-hmm. in the lumber industry, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And he found that certain competition also inspired different teams, motivated different teams to excel.
Was this competition set up in a healthy way, or was it set up in a sort of us versus them, winner take all kind of way?
It was a healthy way.
Okay.
And it was to inspire increased productivity in an industry that, if correct me, Rich, they had suffered some setbacks and management had become concerned about the profitability. And they went back to the employees and started really looking at what was motivating them on a more granular level. And the competition turned out to be very successful in that particular experiment. I'll have to put that in our references.
Yeah. I don't remember all the details of that one, but I do remember us discussing that. And healthy competition, you know, it can be a great thing. Interdepartmental, like, you know, inside of an organization, or, you know, one of those change. We talked about this in episode one, Ben, I think it might have been, you know, one of those things about, you know, that initiates change is we have to keep up with the Joneses, right? We have competition. We have to, rally together and bring ourselves back on top, you know? So,
Right.
And in terms of what you were talking about is in some of those personal goals on a team level that you are setting up with the folks that you were coaching, personal pride, personal achievement, keeping up with the Joneses, that competition thread could be in there too.
Yeah.
Is that similar in the way that you guys are talking about it? Is that similar to almost a gamification approach? Because I've seen that work in some organizations where you have essentially a large change, very cross-functional kind of thing, and different teams might be competing with each other, kind of air quote competing with each other to win like the little gold star of the month kind of thing for how many X's they can complete in a certain amount of time, or how many Y's they can finish before the end of the week, something like that, where it's kind of healthy and the reward is really silly, like a little desktop trophy that just says, hey, well done, or a little bobblehead of the president of the company, or just something like that. But people take this really, really almost outsized excitement about winning that CEO bobblehead for the week and being on top for the week, whatever. And, you know, I've seen that work really well. And that's sort of like fun, healthy kind of competition.
Team building.
Yeah. It's kind of team building. And it's also, you know, to get us back to one of the things we were starting to think about, it's something that you can sustain along a longer time frame than just the change. Because if you have something like how many client questions did we successfully resolve, and not to like where I check the box kind of success, but where the client gives me a really good rating on a social media platform or says, yes, you resolved this to my satisfaction. And you know, there's some kind of proof of that. The teams that do that well get the bobblehead for the week or whatever it is. That's that you could do for ad nauseum. That's got nothing to do with installing a new process or a new system.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and that goes a long way to starting to bringing this to the wrap up of change, right? It brings into the enculturation part of things, right? Where we're actually starting to create this in, you know, as part of the culture, because you're creating artifacts, right? Those artifacts are on the like Edgar Schein artifact or organizational culture model. Artifacts are these visible representations of what we want culture to be, right? So when you start putting those visible rewards out there of, you know, these, you know, this bric-a-brac or whatever it is, right? But people start associating that with the values and where you want to be going, right? That makes a lot of sense. I love that that part of the
is
I've never done it, but I, boy, that seems like, first of all, fun, and second of all, there's some stick-to-itiveness of it.
There we go. Rich Cruz bobblehead.
That's a big head.
I know. a lot of bobble. I like that. So is the official term artifact or bric-a-brac? What's the term of art in the OD field?
Oh, well, I mean, it's in the OD field, it's artifact. That's artifact, espoused values, and shared tacit assumptions. Those are
what. Wow. I shouldn't have asked.
I think bric-a-brac.
You did. And so it's your fault, Ben.
I know. It's always my fault. The other thing I was thinking is that a new word for me today is enculturation. I like that word. It's a good like SAT kind of, do y'all remember Scrabble? Good Scrabble word. Enculturation.
That is the New Year's Eve in the Cruz family is all about Scrabble and fighting whether or not that word actually exists.
I can't wait to see who's bringing the biggest dictionary next New Year's Eve. There you go. Brilliant.
That's right.
Brilliant.
I have this.
Look at that. There you go. The big book of enculturation.
It's always right at the tip of my fingers here.
Always. There you go.
For Scrabble.
For Scrabble. Yeah.
There you go. Right.
Brilliant.
Right.
This is cool. All right. So far, Rich, go ahead.
I said, I think we're coming up on time here. So I think.
I was going to say so far I'm hearing themes of incentivizing and making the incentives bidirectional or multidirectional so that it's not just someone saying from the top, you will do this and you get a rap on the knuckles if you don't. But there's sort of this sense of what are some ways that we can co-create incentives that we can all agree to, and that the incentives, creating the right incentives, will help establish that motivation so that when we get into the vroom theory, that people's expectations of the outcome will be met and they'll continue their behavioral changes and sustain those. Go ahead.
Two key pieces to that are this idea of feedback, open opportunities for feedback in a safe environment. Is this thing? I need more training. I might be failing. Maybe it's great. Maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. And then flexibility in that process as things roll out and continue on the timeline. Mm-hmm. Flexibility to be open to those changes.
And just another part of that is to set up documented and verbally express kind of policies around that. Like, it's okay that you maybe make these mistakes or whatever, you know? So, I think there needs to be some actual assurance, like expressed and communicated that they're going to be safe. You
know? And maybe even have those, you're allowed to make so many mistakes and that turns into your personal goals, not to make mistakes, but once you realize what your weakness areas are, to assess that and then to make it your personal goal to triumph over those particular things that set you back and make a policy around the idea that you're allowed to have these things that set you back and then they can become goals and then you can feel re-engaged and towards that self-efficacy.
Mm. One of the things that strikes me is that in prior episodes, and we've talked a lot, and I think Cheryl, you mentioned this prior, is that this idea of a lot of the change we've been talking about has been from the perspective of someone who wants the change at a higher level. And what I'm hearing today is this notion that it's also got to be a bottom up or grassroots kind of push back into that so that there's a combining of change mentality and incentivization. And it's almost like the responsibility of people throughout the organization to say, here's what's going to motivate me. Here's how I'm going to buy in. And here's how I'm going to live these values and live this culture longer term so that the change sticks. And it's not quite organic, but it's almost like a, a fully bought in kind of way that people have created themselves. So it's back to that co-creation, but it's also a co-incentivization, co-motivation kind of thing. So it's not just that it's leadership down, but it's also that people have this responsibility to take maybe not ownership of the change, but take ownership of their own involvement in that change.
Yeah, yeah.
Great way to say it, Ben. Yep.
Great. Well, everyone, anything else we want to add as we wrap up this episode?
Co-enculturation.
Co-enculturation.
And bric-a-brac.
That's a new and bric-a-brac. Oh boy, added to our lectionary. I think we have plenty more to discuss on this. I think we really still need to get to the taking this motivation to that, you know, refreezing stage or, you know, whatever
the sustainability of it. Yeah. Right. I mean, I think we did a nice job kind of getting into that realm, but there's probably a few things that we can weave in going forward as far as how you make change longer lasting.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 So
Rich Cruise bobbleheads for everyone. That'll do it.
Wow.
I'm doing it right now.
Need some really heavy springs for this big old noggin. All right. Well,
nice one.
It said, thanks for joining us, everyone, again for the Harmonious Workplaces podcast. And next time we should all have our.
There you go. That's what motivates people.
That's what motivates
H Dub mug.
Yes, we need our Harmonious Workplaces mugs next week.
It is my expected outcome.
That's yes, expected harmonious outcome. Swag.
Hey, look at that. I just set up an expectation. So, all right.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, we'll see everyone. You in the next
episode.
Thank you both.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Harmonious Workplaces. You can find Harmonious Workplaces on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and other streaming platforms. We'd love any feedback on whatever channel you find us on. Please rate, like, and share our podcast with your network. And remember to add Harmonious Workplaces to your list of favorites to get notified about each new episode. To contact Rich or Cheryl, please visit www.workbalanceconsulting.com. To connect with Ben, find him on LinkedIn or visit at www.harborsidestrategy.com.